We thank you for taking the time to listen to this teaching from Metro Church. We hope this inspiring message will empower and enrich your life.
So today I want to talk about, by the way, I did you a favor and I cut this message in half because I had 15 points. I just thought, I believe when you become a senior pastor, you get the anointing of longevity. And so I was like, what is this? And so I did you a favor. And so this is, even though we're in the middle of a series right now, there will be two parts for the sake of you having lunch today. Is that okay? Somebody high five your neighbor like he's thinking of us right now. Come on. Come on. And so I want to talk to you today about a strong friendship. If you're taking notes, it's a strong friendship is. And we're going to talk about what a strong friendship is. But what does make a great friendship? What makes one friendship better or truer than another? Good friends aren't always easy to find, are they? And many of our friendships are born at what I call convenient crossroads of life. What does that mean? It means we happened to go to school together, we played on the same sports team, we played in the same band, or sat at the same cafeteria table. Do you hear what I'm saying? Some of our friendships, it was just convenience that put us together, and we happened to be able to build off of that. And how many think that's okay? I mean, some of my best friends have been at convenient intersections, and some of the greatest were conveniently in God's house. And all these years later, 20-some years later, we're serving, we're still great friends, and we're serving God together, and that's amazing. But look, just because you have been friends with someone for a long time doesn't mean they are the best or truest of friends. Can anybody relate to that? Somebody you've known forever. And yes, you're friends, and you may have been closer in certain seasons of your life, but you know, there's this reality that just because we've been friends forever doesn't mean we're the bestest of friends. You know what I mean? Because there are some people that you've known for less time that you would go, man, I can call on that person for anything. Anybody have some of those people in your life? The question is, are you that to anyone else? I'll leave that for you. Sometimes it's in life's trials that the truest and greatest of friends are revealed. And, there are many friends that are there for the laughs and the fun. Anybody? You know, they're there for the good times, but when things get hard in your life, they all of a sudden disappear because they never signed up for drama. Anybody? I'll tell you, this espresso is drying my mouth out, so we're going to go with the water while we talk. Is that okay? It's better this way. All right. But yeah, I mean, the reality is there's some friends that, you know, as long as things are going good, they're there. But as soon as something starts to creep up in your life, it's like all of a sudden, where are they? And the truest friends, listen to this thought. The truest friends remain committed. They don't become omitted during tough times. They remain committed. They don't disappear, right? They remain committed. They don't become omitted during those rough times. And so what are some of the telltales or characteristics of the greatest kind of friends? So let's look at one of the greatest friendships written about in the Bible to extract these truths, okay? I want to talk to you today about Jonathan and David. Jonathan and David, their friendship began right after David kills Goliath. Now, imagine this, okay? David kills the giant and walks into the presence of the king, King Saul, with head in hand. I thought it'd be best if we didn't have props today, okay? And he walks in with head in hand, and not only is King Saul there, but his son Jonathan is there. And that's the first time they meet. How many think that is a pretty crazy moment to, like, I pick you as a friend? You mean business. You know, like, so this moment, you can kind of imagine it, and we're gonna walk through it together in scripture, but talk about a friendship that was built on a mountaintop. Man, were things good in that moment for the whole kingdom, right? In a moment, David became a hero of a nation and was an easy choice for a new friend. Ever run into those easy moments for a new friend? And so who wouldn't want to befriend their kingdom's hero? But what made this relationship special, true, and even great was what took place when things weren't going great. Let's jump into the story when David returns from killing Goliath. So let's start in 1 Samuel 17. It says this in verse 57. As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul. And David, still holding the Philistine's head, "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked him. David said, "I am the son of your servant, Jesse of Bethlehem." Let's keep rolling. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return home to his family. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic, even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. So what's interesting is they go from not knowing each other to all of a sudden Jonathan just feels this huge connection to this guy. Now I want to tell you, it was more than just because he was the hero, and we come to find that out. There are a lot of people that are drawn to wanting to be your friend for what you have, or the moment you step into some sort of promotion. But what happens when that dulls and when that fades, you know? And so what's interesting, though, is as soon as David kills Goliath and King Saul realizes how important this guy is to the kingdom, you know, he just is like, hey, you're going to live here at the palace, right? You're going to live here on grounds. And so have you ever had that friend where you grew up just pretty much living at their house, sleeping over all the time? Well, that kind of is what happened with Jonathan and David. They became friends, and then all of a sudden he lived there. And so those kind of things, you know, there's strength in time, and you can grow relationships in time. And I'm not saying that if your best friend is the opposite sex, you need to move in with him. Like, I heard him preach clearly. You heard what you wanted to hear. Anybody. So while David went about his duties under King Saul, though, things didn't stay perfect. And I don't have the ability to read three chapters, so I'm going to paraphrase some of it. And you're welcome to pick it up, like I said, in chapter 18 and run through 21, because we're going to be there next week as well. But this is what happened. So what's David? David's doing so well. He's getting promotions from Jonathan's father. He's you know, everyone's receiving him well and appreciating him for what he's done saving the kingdom, yeah? And so while David went about his duties under King Saul, although he was acting wisely and living honorably before the king, the people in the kingdom were so in love with David and his valiant victory over the giant, they began to sing songs about David, elevating him above the sitting king. How many think that could create some problems? Look what it says in 1 Samuel 18:7. The ladies in the town made songs, and as they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands, but David his tens of thousands." How many think the ego of a king might have a problem with that? You think right. And so the very next day, Saul was angered and jealous. Now, do you remember the reason David ever even came into Saul's presence, so to speak? It wasn't because he killed Goliath. He was actually already in the king's service playing the harp. Remember, he was a wicked harp player. He could shred those strings in the most peaceful way that could just calm the king down. And so he was back playing the harp for King Saul. But after all this stuff was going on in the city, the king was just outraged. And so what happens? He decides he's going to pin David to the wall, and he hurls a spear at him to kill him. Man, those girls outside dancing and singing did not help David's cause. That's all I'm saying. But David runs out and saves himself, and this happens more than once. How many think, like, that's a serious problem? You know? Could you imagine, you know, in a courtroom, they're trying to defend the king? He's like, he only did it once! No, I did it more than once. He only did it more than once! That doesn't look well either, does it? And so, look what it says here, 1 Samuel 18:10-12. It says, Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, I'll pin David to the wall. But David eluded him twice. Saul was afraid of David because the Lord was with David but had departed from Saul. That's the big deal. And you say, Chad, I thought this is about Jonathan and David. You need to understand the story, because the reality is a lot of the things that are going on between relationships and friendships, a lot of any of the stalemate moments or the times where things aren't great, sometimes it has nothing to do with the friendship. It has everything to do with everything going on around the friendship. You say, what's going on between us, or why aren't we so close? Well, look at what's going on around you, not just what you or he or they said. You see what I'm saying? And so I got to tell this whole story. And so how many think that, or how many know, maybe you've personally known, that a friendship can become under siege? It can really be in a tough place when family members don't approve, or when family members all of a sudden start creating issues. Anybody? Yes. And that added pressure to the relationship. And think about it. Jonathan's best friend is almost killed by his own father over jealousy. More than once. Talk about being stuck between a rock and a hard place. Saul begins his plot to ruin David. He begins to send him on all the battle campaigns in hopes to see him fall to the sword. But David keeps winning because God is with him. Saul tries to ruin him from the inside by offering him, this is just bad, offering him his own daughter, known to be a handful, to ruin him through marriage. Now that's just wrong. Look what it says in verse 21. It says, I will give her to him, he thought, so that she may be a snare to him. Goodness gracious. Sneak attack marriage. What? When none of this was working, he finally plotted to murder David. This is an important story to help understand just how much pressure there was around Jonathan and David's relationship. Let's pick up in chapter 19 and verse 1. It says this, Saul told his son Jonathan and all the attendants to kill David. But Jonathan had taken a great liking to David and warned him, my father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field where you are. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out. Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king do wrong to his servant David. He has not wronged you, and what he has done has benefited you greatly. He took his life in his hands when he killed the Philistine. The Lord won a great victory for all Israel, and you saw it and were glad. Why then would you do wrong to an innocent man like David by killing him for no reason? Saul listened to Jonathan and took this oath. As surely as the Lord lives, David will not be put to death. How many understand words are good? Actions are totally different from words. And so this story takes some serious twists and turns that we will dive into next week. But for this week, I want to pause the story here and begin looking at the things that make this friendship so strong. Is that all right? So what makes Jonathan and David's relationship so strong? Number one, strong friendships are totally committed. Strong friendships are totally committed. I like how the Message version puts this. Look at it says in 1 Samuel 18:1. It says, I'll read it from here. It says, Jonathan was deeply impressed with David. An immediate bond was forged between them. He became totally committed to David. From that point on, he would be David's number one advocate and friend. You know, how many could use a friend like that? The reality is, if you want to attract friends like that, you've got to be a person that is like that. See, we always want somebody to come and be the things we need, but very rarely are we focused on, are we being the thing others need? And the reality is, Jesus made it very clear that we need to be servants. It says he, the greatest, came to serve all. And if we want to be the greatest, we need to be servant first, right? Isn't that all the things that he's taught us? Well, the reality is too many of us are worried about our own issues to ever even serve someone else's issues, to ever even be totally. The reality is it's hard at this day and age to find anyone totally committed to anything. Why? Yeah, I don't feel like it today. You know, I really believe that the feeling issue, the emotional issue, the directional issue based on what I feel is one of the number one things the devil uses to ruin people. See, he can talk many languages. He can do all sorts of things to try and trip you up. But if he can just get you focused on your feeling, this is exactly why Jesus talks so much about fasting. We've got to make sure that our flesh isn't the loudest voice. We've got to make sure that our urges and our desires are put on a leash. We've got to make sure that we actually are in a position where we're not so focused on our needs that we can be a servant to others. Because Jesus, he wasn't so focused on his needs. He wasn't so focused on what he, you know, what was going on in his world. He was always looking out. But a strong friendship are ones that are totally committed. Other translations to the scripture where it says totally committed are the immediate bond. It also says knit together or in one spirit. Man, that's a strong friendship. And you go, how did that happen in a moment? I mean, he didn't know him, you know? And you know, in this situation, it's not like a draw physically, like Dreamweaver. You know, hair's blowing. This is totally different. This is a friendship, right? This is an attraction by lust. There's something about this man. I will serve him. There's something about this friend. I barely know him, but just to see who he is and what he just did, I want to be in his world. That's what ended up happening. And so we have to understand, if you want to be part of a great relationship, a strong relationship, then be sure what you are committing to, because you got to be totally committed. You have to be totally committed. And so there are times where you're like, yeah, you know, this area or this part, they'll call him, you know, Jim. This part of Jim is awesome. I'll hang with him all the time on this part of the gym. And Jim's really cool. And I'll be committed to the fun times with Jim. But Jim's got some serious baggage on this side of his life. And honestly, I don't really want to be involved in anything else. So Jim, if we're going to go out and have fun, we're doing it. We're going to be greatest of friends. But the minute you bring up your other half, or the minute you bring up your problem, and the minute I'm out. That's so surface and so shallow, and exactly opposite of who we're called to be. We're called to be servant. We're called to be totally committed. You know, we need to be committed to the cause. What's the cause? The next thing God has in front of you that you're supposed to do. Okay. So Jonathan saw David for the person he was. A brave, courageous guy who wouldn't back down from a fight for truth and would stand up for what was right even in the face of a giant with a sword. Someone who put God before his own well-being. He was a warrior of a man and a humble spirit of a teenager. One who was loyal to his father and the kingdom. How many think, when you start being able, you barely know this guy, but just everything you have seen, not through word, but through deed, everything you have just seen, you start to get a picture of the fruit that comes from that tree. You start to get a picture of the person under there, who's inside, and you all of a sudden start to go, oh. See, being drawn to somebody because of superficial, that's superficial. But being drawn to somebody because there's depth and there's something in there that stokes the fire for you to be better, now that's something you can be totally committed to. Yeah? And so you don't have to know someone for a long time to judge the fruit of one's actions. And you're saying, Pastor Chad, you just say I need to judge people? Oh my goodness, you don't even read your own Bible. Jesus tells us to judge a tree by its fruit. Matthew 7:16, by their fruit you will recognize them. You will understand who they are. You will be able to see what's underneath. When you see a tree and you see fruit that's rotten, are you yelling at the fruit or are you yelling at the tree? When Jesus came and didn't find figs on the fig tree, did he blame the figs that didn't exist or did he blame the tree? Okay. So Jesus was using an analogy we can understand to help us understand the hearts of men and women. Our actions come from an inward place. The Bible says out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? And if it's in us, oftentimes it comes out of us. Yes? And so choose wisely your friends. as we are called to be strong friends, but in order to be strong friends, you must be totally committed. What are you committing to? I think you got that point. Number two, strong friendships love the other as themselves. They love the other as themselves. And we live, you've heard it, I've read it, everyone's read it. We live in the me, I, my, why, if it's not about I, time of the world. This isn't even a generation thing. You know, people want to just blame the younger generation. It's actually something that I see with regardless of age. You know, and the reality is this. A strong friendship is one where someone loves the other as themselves. It's a relationship that is based on a covenant. The unspoken, but especially when spoken. Look what it says in 1 Samuel 18:3. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Strong friendships are not selfish, rather selfless. There must be an overflow of love to be selfless. Would you agree with that? When it gets harder and harder for you to serve your spouse, there's selfishness. When it gets harder and harder for you to give up some of the fun things you had planned to help your friend in need, you're struggling with selflessness. And so the reality is, if you want to have strong friendships, you've got to be able to make sure that you love that other person like you love yourself. See, everyone likes the pyramid effect. What is going to be the number one thing? And then everything else will kind of have to work itself out. And so if the number one thing is me, then wrong! Well, it's me. No! It's not! It's God, and what did God say? And if we can get God in the right position, we can love God purely, then everything else will fall into play. You know, people go, Chad, I need like you to write a book about like four most important things. No, you don't. You just need to love God and love him well. Love him right. If you'll be pure in your intentions with God, if you'll learn from his word, everything else works itself out. And when they don't work themselves out, if you have the right people committed to you that love you as themselves, they'll let you know where you need to fix. If you are someone that struggles with selfishness, then I'd encourage you to work on saying no to yourself more often. We have to war against ourselves to make ourselves better. You ever done something and you're like, oh, I don't want to do that. Why did I do that? If you ever intended to do something and then you know, like Paul was rhetorically talking about when I try to do this, but I end up doing this. And, you know, in that manner, Paul, you know, most theologians and historians believe Paul wasn't actually saying, I'm doing this. He's writing in a way where he's saying, this is how people think. Do you understand? People think, well, if the Apostle Paul screwed up that much, I can just go about my life. He was talking about your life. He was saying it in a way where you read it, you understand it, and it resonates. But the reality is this. We need to understand that if we are continually doing things we don't want to do, you need to wage war in your own mind. You need to wage war in your own life. And this means war, you know? There's no more of me doing what I want all the time because that's not healthy. It's not. You see people win the lottery and it's like they've got all these millions of dollars and they're like, I don't have to do anything anymore. I quit my job. I did it. And what happens? They live for themselves. They become poor and then they got to start over again. You can't just do what you want all the time. Just a thought. So just as Paul said, I beat my body and make it my slave. What did he mean by that? He meant he would not listen to the screams of his selfish urges and would take command over his flesh. See, strong friendships aren't forged by selfish people. Strong friendships, you're not going to find a strong friendship with a selfish person. It just is what it is. This rolls right into point number three. Strong friendships are generous. They're sacrificial. They are honoring through action. Strong friendships are generous. Look what it says in 18 verse 4. It says, Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Why on earth would he do that? I'd like to believe he wasn't standing there naked. These people had undergarments too. Maybe he was just in toga form at that point. But the reality is this. Why would you do that? Because a generous heart finds a way to honor. This man had just saved the kingdom. This man had not only was he heroic, and not only had he literally just kept them all from becoming slaves to another kingdom, there was so much character and so much in him that drew him to want this relationship and this friendship. He was like, let me show you honor. Let me be generous to you. And some people would say, he's a prince. I mean, he's got the treasury of the kingdom. Why wouldn't he just go buy him all new stuff? Why would he give him hand-me-downs? In that day and age, it was actually more honor to say, what I have, what I consider good for me, I want you to have. It was more honor to literally give what was his. It was more honor for a king or a prince or for the kingdom, you know, the magistrates, for these people to literally give the royalty of what they wore. You know, you'd see a king put on his own robe. You remember that? You've seen it in other stories. You know, when Esther stands in the gap for her people and Mordecai's plan comes to failure, what happens? Uncle, can't think of the name. Mordecai, who's the other guy that was, Haman, thank you. You're like, Chad, you should know that. My veggie tails aren't coming to me quick enough, okay? Mordecai was put on the king's horse, and the robe was put on him. Do you understand what I'm saying? That wasn't in the notes. That's why it's not there. But a generous heart finds a way to honor. Okay? Number four. Strong friendships value truth over loyalty. And you say, what? What do you mean by that? I'll tell you exactly what I mean. Family expectations and loyalty to his father and king did not outweigh Jonathan's value for truth. His own father, his king, the loyalty that should have been there, or the expectation of that loyalty that should trump everything, didn't outweigh the value of honesty and truth. And that's what strong friendships are made of. They value truth over loyalty. Look what it says in 1 Samuel 19, 1 and 2. Saul told his son Jonathan, all the attendants, to kill David. But what did Jonathan do? He had taken a great liking to David and warned him. He chose his friend over blood. He chose his friend over loyalty. He chose, you know, he was more loyal to his friend than he was to expectation of loyalty. Are you following me? That's refreshing. There are a lot of people that they just don't want to get in the messy stuff, huh? And so he chose to warn him. Saul would have expected his own son to side with family regardless of what Jonathan saw, but Jonathan was an upright man and a truth seeker. He was committed to truth and innocence, not expectations and pressures. Have you ever had someone close to you turn on you because of pressure? There's nothing more frustrating than when you thought that person was going to be for you, but just to stay away from the messy situation, they just backed out. And they said, you guys all figure it out. I'm just going to be a neutral party. And you're like, but you know the truth. Why on earth would you be a neutral party? All it did is show the true colors that they weren't the friend you thought they were, nor will they be. People just keep saying, well, that was just a bad moment. Let's give them another shot. Hey, you can befriend somebody without expecting it to be a strong relationship. But when you start to fail in the understanding of what is not a strong relationship and you try and build something on it, you're going to be the one hurt. Okay? So, true friends choose truth over pressure and don't buckle under the expectations of following a flawed sociocultural norm. Anybody? So, family before all, that's what this norm would be. Well, what if the family is crooked? Okay, number five, strong friendships stand in the gap. True friends will stand in the gap for each other. Look what it says in chapter 19, 2 and 3. It says, Jonathan warned David, my father Saul is looking for a chance to kill you. Be on your guard tomorrow morning. Go into hiding and stay there. I will go out and stand with my father in the field. I will go do what you can't do. I will go and stand with my father in the field. I'll speak to him about you and will tell you what I find out. Jonathan was not willing to be a bystander or onlooker when there was trouble in his BFF's life. he was going to help, even if it was his father he would have to confront. Think about these angles here. Put yourself in the position of having to confront your own father for the sake of a friend. Not easy stuff. And lastly, as I wrap up here, let's jump into number six. Number six, strong friendships speak up. They speak up for each other. They don't just stand in the gap and pray. They act on the thing that they feel. They act on the truth that they know. And so they speak up. Friends are easy to come by when it's just about fun and laughing. But when the friendship is no longer on mountaintops, instead having to face struggles or outside pressures, many lesser friends will disconnect until the storm passes. You may have experienced that. Things start to get better for you, and all of a sudden that person's back around. You're like, where you been? Oh, just had stuff, things, you know, life. That wasn't, you know, totally clouded by your life. I was just chilling over here. Since you figured it out, I'll be a friend again. That's not what strong friendships are made of. Jonathan didn't do that. He stood in the gap. And Jonathan was not going to remain silent, even to the king. He confronted the judge, the accuser, with wisdom and honesty. In verse 4, Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul, his father, and said to him, let not the king do wrong to his servant. He was willing to go and say, let me reason with you about all that David did for us. Let me put myself out there. Let me not just pray for you, my friend. Let me literally go and see what I can do for my friends. Let me confront their problem with truth and see what happens. I pray for friends that will speak up when people are speaking about me. I pray for friends that understand my character beyond what others may think or say. You know, I pray that people will say, I know the person you're speaking of, and that's not right. I know what you're claiming, but that can't be true. See, friends aren't someone that goes, oh, well, you know, the truth will find itself out. I know him. He's a good guy. I don't know. No, we've got to speak and defend. We've got to step up and be the friend. I would not want to be in a situation or a fly on the wall where people I thought were close to me were willing just to back out and bow down, so to speak, until everything, you know, works itself out. But the only way that happens is if I become that friend, because you reap what you sow. It's so easy to want someone to be something for you. It's so much harder to be the person you want someone to be for you. But that's exactly what we're called to do. If you want strong friendships, you've got to be a better person. This is plainly it. You've just got to decide that I'm going to sow better seed to attract better people. I'm going to sow better. I'm going to take care of relationships better. I'm going to understand what totally committed looks like. I'm going to make the decision, you know, not just to be a fair weather friend. It was hard having to stop in the middle of this story. Because, man, does this story get better. If you want to jump ahead, feel free to read the next two chapters as we come back next week to finish the stronger series. But look at, strong friendships have certain qualities. Go back and reread this, study this, focus on the friendships that you want and how you can be better to not only attract those, but to serve someone else.
We hope you've enjoyed this teaching from Metro Church. For more information about Metro Church, please visit our website at www.metro-church.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter.